You're listening to WPTS Pittsburgh. Aroo!
I'm Drew Pushko, and this is your WPTS News Update. President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris will make a rare campaign appearance together today to help Pennsylvania Democratic Senate candidate John Fetterman. Biden and Harris typically don't travel together, but they'll both be in Philadelphia today to help Fetterman after a rough outing in his debate Tuesday night with Republican candidate Mehmet Oz. Fetterman showed the lingering effects of the stroke he suffered in May as he struggled at times to answer questions. Fetterman has led Oz in polls all year, but his stroke has led to some uncertainty among Democrats about whether he can close the campaign with a victory. Elon Musk is now the official owner of Twitter. The billionaire finalized the deal on Thursday evening, buying the company for roughly $44 billion. One of his first moves was ousting top executives. Musk attempted to pull out of the agreement for months before finally agreeing to buy the company. Musk has faced criticism for saying he would unban former President Trump's account and would loosen restrictions on what's allowed on the site. The Pitt News is reporting that family and friends of those killed in the Tree of Life massacre lit candles in memory of their loved ones in Schenley Park on Thursday afternoon. Hundreds of people gathered on Thursday to commemorate the 11 lives lost in the 2018 attack on the Tree of Life synagogue, the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in the United States. Once again, I'm Drew Pushko, and this has been your WPTS News Update.
Oh, WPTS Radio would like to remind students to use caution traveling both on and off campus. A big part of ensuring your safety is avoiding walking home alone late at night. If you feel unsafe, there are different options that you can use. Walking in larger groups can help deter criminal activity. Port Authority buses offer a wide variety of routes that can help commuters get home late at night. Safe Rider runs from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. and offers rides to students in the Oakland area. You can call to receive a ride at 412-648-2255. That's 412-648-2255. You can also call the Pitt Police to escort you home. The number to call is 412-624-2121. Stay safe, Panthers.
POGOH is the bicycle share program in Pittsburgh, with stations located all around the city, including Oakland. POGOH is easy to use and available 24/7. All you have to do is register online or at a loading dock, pick up your bike, and ride. For a map of stations and more information on how to register, you can visit POGOH.com.
Hello. You're listening to Campus Roundtable on WPTS Radio. I'm your host, Andrew, your WPTS Radio News Director. And today we've got a very special Campus Roundtable. I'm joined by our guests. If you'd like to introduce yourselves, just your names for the audience, please.
I'm Rachel Cranson. I'm the Director of Jewish Studies at the University of Pittsburgh and a professor in the Religious Studies Department.
And I'm Eve Wider. I am the liaison from the University Library System to the Jewish Studies Program, and I also run the library at the Greensburg campus.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Eve. Okay, so so we've got you on today because this week marks 4 years since the attack at Tree of Life Synagogue in Northern Squirrel Hill. A really just awful tragedy, one that we, you know, should recognize that there are human causes too. And, you know, it's, as a public radio station here at WPTS Radio, we don't tolerate anti-Semitism or hate in any form. And, I just want to thank you guys for being on here to, like, you know, help, you know, remember that and draw attention to that. So thank you again.
We're happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And now, we got your names. We got a sort of brief overview of your occupations, but if you'd just like to, you know, talk a little bit more about that, and maybe actually we'll go into the brief overview of the Jewish Studies program if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I should also say that I personally teach a number of courses related to Jewish studies and mm-hmm. religious studies. So I teach courses in religion and sexuality, gender and Jewish history, Holocaust history and memory, and Jewish urban studies.
Mm-hmm.
So if any listeners have interests in those topics, be happy to see you in class.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jewish studies program at Pitt, we sponsor courses, of course, but we also have research grants and sponsor events and lectures related to Jewish history and culture and religion and creative expression. And we also have a very expansive view of what constitutes Jewish studies. Basically, from our perspective, anything that can mm-hmm. generate an interesting Jewish-related discussion is within our purview.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just to give some examples, last week we hosted Professor Michal Nachman, who's a scholar from the UK, who talks about and researches the foodways of Sephardic and Mizrahi Jewish communities, which is to say Jews who trace their ancestry to Spain and the Middle East. And next week we'll be hosting Professor Max Strassbelt to talk about transgender identities in the Talmud. So we always have something really interesting and innovative going on.
Okay, awesome, awesome. Thank you. Eve, if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about, you know, sort of your role, that would be great.
Yep. So I am the liaison between the library system and the Jewish Studies program. So that means that I try to make sure we buy books, journals, videos that are helpful to the program faculty mm-hmm. and students. So both to help the faculty with their research and also their teaching, and that the students also have access to resources that help them as well. So both Jewish texts mm-hmm. and, you know, analysis of them, and also much about Jewish culture and living.
Great. Okay. So, all right, now that we sort of kind of have an overview of, like, who you both are, Eve, I know you kind of have a personal connection to what happened at Tree of Life 4 years ago. So if you wanted to talk a little bit about your, like, your personal experience with that, and, like, sort of how you, like, have kind of come to understood that day, that would be, you know, that would be amazing.
Okay, thanks. So I have been a member of Congregation Dor Hadash since I mm-hmm. moved to Pittsburgh, which is over 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. Congregation Dor Hadash is one of the three congregations that prayed at the Tree of Life building. So there was New Light Congregation and then Tree of Life Congregation. So the shooter didn't know there were three congregations. He didn't know what he was coming into, as far as I understand. So we were holding different services mm-hmm. at the same time. Mm. And so he kind of circulated throughout the building and killed people. So I can speak of my own congregation. I usually would go Friday nights, not mm-hmm. Saturday morning. Saturday morning was a Torah study. So mm-hmm. that traditionally is when we would have a service for the first hour and then a discussion about the latest Torah reading in the second hour. Mm-hmm. So that service started at 10. Mm-hmm. And so people were setting up. I didn't really know that process because I never went to Torah study. I would sleep in or do other things on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. I was actually on the way to a wedding of a friend in Ohio. I was mm-hmm. driving. And all of a sudden, my phone kept exploding with texts and phone calls. And I didn't know why, and I was by myself. And so I eventually pulled over onto the side of the road because I didn't know what was happening, and I realized what was happening. So mm-hmm. The friends I was going to a wedding at were dear friends, and it was a Catholic ceremony. And the groom actually called me. And that was when I actually pulled over, because I'm like, if the groom is calling me, something's going on. And he was so upset and worried. And I was just like, get married, please, don't worry. I mean, you can't do anything. And I'm on my way. So I participated in the, you know, mm-hmm. I went to the, and all this time people are texting and worried about me. And mm-hmm. I'm worried about all my people in the congregation. So that was my sort of personal experience with mm-hmm. the day, and then coming home to sort of mourning and shock and mm-hmm. Devastation with what happened.
Well, thank you so much for, you know, being here and telling your story. It's mm-hmm. it's genuinely one of the most, like, important things that we as, like, a radio station do, is, you know, uplift people and tell people's stories. Mm-hmm. And once again, this is Campus Roundtable on WPTS Radio, and I'm joined by Program Director of the Jewish Studies Program, Rachel Cranson, and the liaison with the Library for the Jewish Studies Program, Eve Weider. Thank you so much for being here, both of you, once again. And so, following the attack, so how did things, like, change sort of immediately following it? Like, what, you know, how, like, did, like, protocol change? How did, you know, people's, like, sort of mentality change?
So I would say on a practical level,
right.
American Jews, both in Pittsburgh and elsewhere, had to start making very difficult and sometimes painful decisions with regard to security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the one hand, most American Jews really want their synagogues to feel welcoming right. and open to anybody who wants to walk through the doors. On the other hand, unfortunately, we learned that we really had to be vigilant about who was in the building. And mm-hmm. and there really is no easy answer to this tension. There's especially a concern that added security could make Jews of color feel unwelcome or even put them in added danger. So, mm-hmm. again, these are really difficult and painful discussions that you know, certainly Jews in Pittsburgh started having, but also American Jews around the country started having about how to negotiate that.
Yeah, totally.
And I think for us as a practical, as a faith community, we had to find a place to pray and come together as a community. And thankfully, Congregation Road of Shalom welcomed us and actually the Tree of Life congregation as well into their building and their spaces very graciously. And the JCC also, the Jewish Community Center also stepped up and had us, let us have our high holidays there and were very kind to us the year after.
Yeah. And one thing I just also like to add is that the Jewish community in Squirrel Hill tends to be pretty close-knit. People know each other. So even people who may not have been part of the congregations who are attacked likely knew at, you know, knew people who were there, knew people who had been hurt, knew people who had been killed. So, you know, the connections really run deep. And it seems to me that every member of the Jewish community felt this attack in a really visceral way. Although obviously there were levels of closeness to the tragedy.
So I would just also add to that, that I think the whole city of Pittsburgh and really the world, felt intense grief, to what happened. And as somebody that has worked on the issue of gun violence in our country before the shooting and after the shooting, even more, I think that, no one feels very safe in our country right now with, the way, this is my personal view, of course, but the way our gun laws are, written and enforced.
Totally. So that's sort of how things kind of changed, like, immediately following it. And you mentioned, Rachel, that there were levels to it. So how is, like, the broader sort of Jewish community in, like, Pittsburgh, or even just the broader American Jewish community, how have they sort of, like, you know, processed this change in, you know, in accordance to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a lot more fear. Sorry. Maybe you should go because I'm about to cough.
It's okay.
It's okay.
sorry. Is there water?
Yeah, there's water. In the there's a fountain out there if you'd like.
I'll be right back.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, Eve, if you wanted to speak on that, that would be great.
Sorry.
If you're
able.
Could
you repeat the question?
Yeah, my apologies.
She's going to take it.
It's okay. Just sort of, how have you felt that, well, Rachel said that there were sort of levels to it, you know, according sort of to closeness, how people sort of have reacted to the attack. So what have you sort of observed via, you know, like, other Jewish people in Pittsburgh or even just, like, other American Jews in general? Like, how have they sort of taken to what's happened? How have they, you know, reacted to it, processed it?
I think there is definitely a feeling of unsafety.
Right.
And in congregational spaces that wasn't there so much before. We have historically had police outside of synagogues during the high holidays to some degree.
Right.
But now it's much more, safety and security are much more prioritized. And for our congregation, Congregation Dor Hadash, which really does see itself as a community-oriented, inclusive, egalitarian congregation, the police presence is hard. And the nervousness around that leads to a lot of, you know, we have a lot of discussions about it that really we weren't discussing those things at that level before. You know, people are afraid to come to pray at certain times.
Right.
You know, it's interesting how the COVID pandemic has kind of come into the mix now. And we have Zoom options. People can come to services remotely. So that's comforting to a lot of people.
Okay. Yeah. No, that makes quite a lot of sense. The sort of Zoom adaptation to it, even, you know, in spite of COVID and also, you know, security concerns. So, how do you think things can change in order to prevent, you know, tragedies like this one? And I don't just mean that in terms of, you know, stamping out anti-Semitism wherever we see it. I mean, you know, you mentioned gun policy a little bit. Obviously, I don't want to put you in a position to air out any opinions that you don't want to.
No, I
but
not afraid to share opinions.
Yeah, no problem, of course.
As a direct result of the shooting, several people in my congregation came together and started a group called Squirrel Hill Stands Against Gun Violence.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a program of Ceasefire PA.
Okay.
And we do a lot of work with lobbying Congress, Senate, local, state, federal, trying to get out the vote, get people talking about these issues and voting on these issues mm-hmm. of guns and access and concerns, because it's terrifying what's happening in our schools, in our movie theaters, in our malls, in our public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, it's hard to accept. And, one thing we want to do is use the opportunity that we sadly became a part of mass shootings that get much more attention than everyday gun violence, to sort of shine a light on, we don't need military style weapons in our communities. We need to do background checks and really, look into the availability of guns in our country. So that to me is something that can be done and can change. People often feel a sense of hopelessness around this issue of guns. And I don't think it's at all something to be hopeless about. Many countries have changed their laws. We can too.
Yeah. And, Rachel, I know you're somewhat,
sorry about that.
I know you're somewhat indisposed, but, the question was, how can things change in order to prevent tragedies like this one? And, I mentioned I don't mean that in just a sort of, like, in the mind kind of way, but in, like, a genuine, like, sort of policy material kind of way. If you had anything you wanted to add,
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with Eve that the fact that it's so easy to purchase firearms in this country puts everyone in danger. And just to add to that, I mean, people who are part of religious, racial, and sexual minorities are more vulnerable because they're more targeted.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, there's also activists and researchers, some of them right here at Pitt, who are working on how to combat the proliferation of hateful speech and conspiracy theories.
Right.
Whether these ideas, frankly, are spread by politicians or television personalities or social media. And then finally, and I think hopefully, there's also the avenue of solidarity politics, or bringing together the various people who've been targeted by violent extremism
mm-hmm.
and to band together so that no one group is fighting alone. And it just seems to me there are many avenues mm-hmm. that we can pursue towards making these kinds of incidences less likely to happen. I think the only one to avoid is the response of not doing anything.
Right. Absolutely. So, you discussed some academic things in your response just now. So how has, what happened that day and the broader sort of rise of anti-Semitism, how has that changed how you teach or otherwise, do academic work, do your job? And this is a question for both of you, of course.
Yeah. So first of all, I started writing on anti-Semitism. This is not a topic that I'd really taken up robustly mm-hmm. before. And I focus more of my teaching on anti-Semitism than I did before, both historically and in the present day. And I've been spending a lot of my time actually helping develop new courses on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels urgent to me because anti-Semitism is pretty poorly understood in this country and frankly around the world. I think that there really are too many ignorant people who unfortunately and I think honestly believe myths. Dangerous myths about Jewish power, about this idea that a cabal of Jews controls the world, who have those, who believe those conspiracies. And, and I think there's others who may recognize that these ideas about Jews being powerful are stereotypes, but don't necessarily understand how that's dangerous or harmful or can lead to just disastrous, devastating outcomes. So without that education and that history, it can be harder to stop or put at least a halt to machinery that leads to anti-Semitic violence. So this has become very much a part of what I see as my mandate in terms of teaching and research.
Right.
And I think for me, I used to kind of separate my social justice advocacy and mm-hmm. activism from my work, and I've been less clear on that definition because hate speech, disinformation, fake news are all things that are part of what librarians work on and
right.
talk about. So I've tried to kind of incorporate that more into my work and more into my connections on campus. And we recently bought a author to Pitt Greensburg that talked about a white nationalist, Derek Black, who changed his mind through going to college and being exposed to meeting people of different backgrounds and actually becoming friends with them. He learned that a lot of the stuff he'd been taught by his parents growing up and read in the on the web or in propaganda of different organizations were not true.
Yeah.
And I just really want people in college to be thinking and exposed to things that are outside of their own experience. And that is what colleges and universities are for. So I'm being more intentional about that work.
Right. Awesome. Okay. Great. So we've talked about sort of conspiracy theories, you know, these white nationalist, white supremacist conspiracy theories, which have been really on the up and up in the last, I would say, you know, the better part of the last decade or so. So what would you describe as some modern political trends that you see as, like, responsible for rising anti-Semitism? Or, like, how can we explain that in our, like, modern political context? Like, why is this happening?
So, I mean, look. This kind of conspiratorial thinking obviously preceded the Trump presidency.
Right.
However, directly before the shooting, the president was tweeting about caravans of immigrants funded by George Soros coming to attack native-born Americans.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of thinking radicalized the gunmen and frankly many other people with guns who've murdered people throughout the country in recent years in El Paso and elsewhere. So I on some level I absolutely do blame the kind of devolution of political discourse that happened during the Trump era. And I also blame all of the other far-right politicians who followed his example. And I think right-wing media personalities like Tucker Carlson and others also who spread conspiracy theories about, you know, global elites and George Soros also have some of the blame here. So, it seems to me that there are unfortunately rather a lot of people who are fueling hateful ideologies of anti-Semitism, of white supremacy. And so it seems to me that we have to be just as vigilant in stopping it.
Right.
And so I guess not incidentally, if you are listening to this, please make sure that you are registered to vote. voting is not enough, but it is somewhere you can start.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is, if you're just tuning in, this is WPTS Radio. This is our Campus Roundtable segment every Friday, 2 to 3. Today we're joined by Rachel Cranson, the Jewish Studies Program Director, and Eve Weider, the liaison to the library for the Jewish Studies program. Want to thank you both for being on again today, and thank you, the listener, for listening. And so I guess we'll move into our next question. So what are some of your concerns, some of your specific concerns for Jewish Americans moving forward? Rather, and of course there's the security concern and, of course, you know, anti-Semitic violence, but I mean, in just every sense of, you know, being concerned, anything you can think of, really. Like, maybe even something that doesn't really get talked about much. I'm not sure what myself, but
I mean, I'm certainly worried about the safety of Jews in America.
Right.
I am also worried about the safety of Muslims in America. I'm
right.
worried about the safety of Black, Brown, and Asian Americans, of
right.
LGBTQ Americans, and of American women, who who can't control their reproductive capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems to me that we're in a very frightening political moment,
right.
where people are in danger, mm-hmm. Not only of losing their rights, but also, again, with the proliferation of firearms, of also of losing their lives. So, I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Okay. So we'll move forward a little bit. So I'm sure both of you being, you know, learned, educated people, you know the concept of repairing the world or tikkun olam. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I apologize. How do you view that concept of repairing the world? How do you see it kind of working itself out today?
Tikkun olam was a concept that originally mm-hmm. came out of Jewish mystical texts.
Right.
And the idea was that our world is broken and holy acts that Jews perform could serve to repair that brokenness and mm-hmm. bring on a sort of messianic age.
Right.
Now, among more contemporary liberal
Jews,
this concept has been used to promote mm-hmm. service and social justice activism with the mm-hmm. idea that any sort of messianic age to come is not going to come from a supernatural source, but it's going to come from the good work that human beings do together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I would just use our congregation Dor HaDash is mm-hmm. very... This is a core tenet of our work and our religious foundations. So currently, one of the things that we were active in before the shooting was advocating politically and financially for supporting refugees resettlement in the United States. and since the shooting, we've only gotten more engaged with that work. Mm-hmm. We're working with Jewish Family Community Services, JFCS, intimately now. We are we're a community sponsor of a refugee family that arrived in the United States on September 8th
mm-hmm.
and six family members. And we, you know, helped find them a place to live, get them winter clothes, take them to the grocery store, you know, get them enrolled in schools, the children. So it's a daily part of my life right now is this work of trying to repair the world for this one family that that's life was destroyed by war and have been displaced for over 20 years. So it's wonderful to be able to directly help refugees and as a faith community to come together around that work.
Right. Awesome. And if you're just tuning in, once again, this is Campus Roundtable on WPTS Radio. We've got two guests involved with the Jewish Studies program. And right now we're discussing Judaism and social justice. And for my next question, so how do you sort of place Judaism in like a larger sort of social justice context? And are there like areas of sort of like crossover between Judaism and like social justice issues you've just discussed, you know, repairing the world and resettling a refugee family? That's wonderful to hear.
Look, I think Jewish or not Jewish, I think that everyone mm-hmm. should be stepping up more to engage in this, in social mm-hmm. justice work, in this work, I guess, in Jewish parlance of tikkun olam or repairing the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that for people who are interested in doing this work through Jewish channels, there's certainly no shortage of Jewish mm-hmm. social justice groups that could use your help.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, and here I'm focusing only on Pittsburgh, the scene looks a little different depending on the city that you're in, but, you know, there's Squirrel Hill Stands, which Eve is involved with, which fights against gun violence. There's Bend the Arc Pittsburgh, which fights white supremacy and anti-Semitism and is also very involved in progressive electoral politics. There's Repair the World, an organization called Repair the World, which offers opportunities for service. Ratzon, which promotes LGBTQ Jewish community as well as mutual aid. There are congregations like Dor HaDash that have very robust social justice committees. There's the Jewish Children and Family Services, again, who work on resettling immigrants. And really, there's so much more. So mm-hmm. I would say rather than kind of bemoaning what the Jewish community may not do, I would encourage people to get involved in the great work that's happening in the community so that it can be right. more impactful. There's certainly no shortage of social justice opportunity.
Mm. Great. Okay. So kind of talking a little bit more about the social justice. So we've recently sort of seen an ascendant sort of right-wing judiciary in this country. And so how do you, as academics, kind of see this rise as, you know, certain decisions are rolled back, decisions that, you know, were previously thought to be legal orthodoxy, like Roe v. Wade. So sort of how do you place that, and how do you kind of associate Jewishness with that?
I mean, it's... My research right now deals mm-hmm. with exactly this question,
right.
so I'm going to apologize right now if I get very specific.
That's fine. Go ahead.
But the book that I'm writing right now is about American Jewish interventions into reproductive politics, and particularly mm-hmm. the legal argument that right. abortion rights should be a First Amendment religious right, because there are moments in Jewish law in which abortions would be mandated.
Mm-hmm.
And because of larger Jewish values about the importance of saving lives and the origin of life, according to really every, even classical Jewish sources, is that mm-hmm. life doesn't begin until the moment of birth.
Right.
And so the idea being that the life of a person who is carrying a pregnancy is always going to be more important and take precedence over fetal life.
Right.
So, from my perspective as a researcher and mm-hmm. yes, as a feminist, it seems to me that the two are intricately connected, and mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. abortion is certainly a matter of human rights, and it's also a matter of religious rights in a way that particularly impacts the Jewish community in this country.
Right. Okay. Let's see here. I think we're sort of at our end in terms of questioning, other than if our guests had anything upcoming, events, anything like that, that you'd like our audience to know about, things you'd like to plug, not financially, of course, just things you'd like people to go to.
I'll mention a few things.
Yeah, of course.
So yesterday, in Squirrel Hill in Schenley Park, mm-hmm. Prospect Park, there was a amazing, commemoration ceremony
mm-hmm.
that was organized by the 1027 Healing Partnership.
Mm-hmm.
On their website is a link to it, and you can view it. It's a really well done event, and I think watching it is very helpful to understand where the Jewish community is in Pittsburgh and how we are healing and coming together with the support of our mayor, county executive, and council people, and also the local churches and different community members. So I would encourage people to take a look at that, as well as Repair the World has a series of events going on in the city already and continuing to do work in memory of the victims of the shooting. So Squirrel mm-hmm. Hill Stands Against Gun Violence has a particular mm-hmm. event on Sunday where we're encouraging people to call. You know, it's a phone bank, basically, but it's virtual. You don't have to go anywhere, and
right.
you will connect you with people that we want to make sure that they get their mail-in ballots in and they, you know, get out to vote, have a plan for voting,
right.
things like that. So that's something that's coming up
Great.
That I'm involved in.
Thank you, Eve.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just add that here in the Jewish Studies program and at the university on November 3rd, as I mentioned before, Dr. Max Strassfeld is going to be talking about transgender identity in the Talmud. That will be November 3rd in the Cathedral, room 501, mm-hmm. At 4 p.m.
Okay, great. All right. So I believe we're at the end of our segment then. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me. And yeah, this has been Campus Roundtable on WPTS Radio. Join us again next Friday from 2 to 3, same time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
Right.
Just who was your friend? Don't be sad, I know you will. Don't give up until true love will find you in the end. This is a promise. With a catch, only if you're looking will it find you, 'cause true love is searching too. How can it recognize you unless you step out into the light? Don't be sad, I know you will. Don't give up until true love finds you in me. Just who was your friend? So don't be sad, I know you will. Don't give up until true love finds you in the end. True love will find you in the end.
I wish that I could freeze time, go to the wild side.
Silence is golden, it's golden, it's golden. Silence is golden, it's golden, it's golden.
Come on, let go.
Hear more original songs, tune in to WPTS Radio.
I got drunk and fell asleep atop the sheets, but luckily I left the heater on.
to spell your name.
I found an S pound and made a bet that if I found a cigarette, I'd drop it all and marry you. Just then a song comes on, you can't always get what you want. The Rolling Stones are what was we, the irony. The Stones became the moss, and once all inhibitions lost, the hipsters made a mission to the farm. We drove by tractor there, the yellow straw replaced our hair. We laced the dairy river with the cream of sweet vermouth.
In my brain, I'll rearrange the letters on the page to spell your name.
You said we only live once, so we touched a little tongue, and instantly I wanted to. I lost my train of thought and jumped aboard the effing as the doors were slowly closing on the world. The sun, and in the taxi home, I'll sing you a Triffid song.
WPTS Radio is proud to support local music. The next song is courtesy of a local Pittsburgh artist.
Carry on the way.